I just said to my daughters, I'd ask them a question. I said, you know, what do you wish you could tell me if you knew I wasn't going to react or this? And one of them said, Dad, you know, when you say don't walk in the room and change the atmosphere in a negative way with your emotions, she goes, that's totally right. And I know I bring a lot of drama into the room, but I wish you could know this. You do it every day. You don't just change the atmosphere of the room. You change the atmosphere of the whole world.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Jonathan Reynolds built Titus Talent Strategies around a deceptively simple promise. The right people in the right seats change everything. But the ceiling is not a hiring problem. It is the inner life of the leader. After years of growth, opportunity, and public success, Jonathan is confronting the cost of being the person everyone needs. The pressure to grow, the body that carried the stress, the family got less intentionality than the business, and the ego hit of building a company that may run better without him. The story is about what happens when a people-first leader realizes the next level may require becoming less central. Jonathan, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So Jonathan, you talk a lot about building Titus Talent, building a company that's really designed around getting the right people in the right seats. When did you, as the leader of Titus Talent, realize that your own seat might be the ceiling that you're hitting?
This is great. Well, I think in the early stages of the business, I think a lot of people are like this, but personally, gripped by vision, gripped with this passion, this energy and the fuel for running fast, running hard and making an impact and growing something significant. That was me and somewhat still is me, just this fuel for what's next. Recognizing that we got to quite a significant size, and we're an odd size company in our industry. There are a lot of sort of mom and pops of way small companies, and then the big ones who've gobbled up others, and we're just sitting in that mid space. And from the very beginning, preaching this, like, hey, people first, we care about you more than profits, but they are connected, but we're deeply, deeply, deeply care about people. The hard part for me was really knowing everybody, what drives them, motivates them, their families, all that kind of stuff. The bigger we got, the stress and anxiety on me trying to kind of pretend that I knew all of those things in people's lives. And I did care, but I didn't have the information to really serve them in the same way. Then I'm like thinking, okay, what if they realize that I don't know, or I'm not intimately involved in their world as much. And it was this anxiety and stress on me as a leader, trying to kind of fake it, really, desperately wanting to be present, desperately wanting to be there and involved in people's lives, but just you can't practically do it for everyone when it gets bigger and you've scaled. And so that caused a lot of physical stress on me, and mental and emotional and all of the stresses.
What's the number that you think that people hit where you start to feel that breakdown, where you don't know everyone? How many employees do you need to have in order for you to start feeling that? What's the number, do you think?
Well, I don't know for other people. It's probably about half of where we're at right now, around 75 people. I started getting to the point where your direct circle, your leaders around you, and you know their direct reports and the multiplication of that. And then beyond that, it just gets a little bit like, oh yeah, and who's that again? And I don't really know them. What drives them? Where are they at? Right. And yeah, so it's kind of the direct reports of your direct reports gets a little bit harder, whatever that number is. You know, I know there's different sort of opinions on how many direct reports people should have, but that multiplication, when you get down multiple generations, that can be really hard. I think probably one of the times when it hit me was when I was no longer involved in any say on hiring. It was like, oh, we hired somebody. Nobody told me about that. You know, it's like, right, that, like, when it got
who
to
are
that
these
level.
People?
Yeah, it's like, what do they do? And right. Then suddenly wanting to sort of micromanage a little bit. It felt like that. I'm like, well, who approved that? How did that work? Who did it? You know, I'm like, just trust the process. We have a system in place for these things. All the right triggers were met. And once it got beyond then, I had to start questioning, looking in the mirror a little bit with the why am I upset with that? Is it ego? Is it because I'm not actually needed? Is it wanted or needed? You know, it's kind of like, this is what is supposed to happen. You know, it's probably when your kids start having kids, it's kind of like, well, did I approve this? You know, it's
like, hey, who?
Nobody
who
asked me.
Right. I think it was Beckwith who said that you're not truly a leader until you are a leader who has created a leader who has created a leader. And when you think about it in those terms, do you think it's really just simply a challenge of your leadership inside of a company where the more hands-on, direct leadership is one thing, but now as you start to grow, you have to actually become a different type of leader, more of one that is leading a small group of leaders, and you're teaching them and you're coaching them and you're training them to become a leader in their own right so that they can go do the same thing and being really comfortable and confident in that.
Absolutely. I think there's that once you recognize the like I just talked about the sort of the ego part of like I'm not needed or I'm not wanted or not useful. The leaders on your team, they have other people look to them as their leader. You're like, well, what about me?
I'm cool too.
did they know me? Did they notice that I was the one who's, you know, it's kind of like really that sort of self-reflection. They're going, actually, I really, really want, it's kind of like with parenting, I want my kids to go further than me. I want them to do really well. I want them to supersede me versus becoming an extension of me and a reflection of, in that sort of sense. I want them to do what they were created to do. And leaders around you, like, I really want you to be a great leader where your teams and you're developing multiple layers of leaders, celebrating that. And anytime that something rubs up and hits the ego, to actually address that in yourself, which is really hard to come to that place. I think every leader seems to think they're self-aware, myself included, and to go, well, where am I not self-aware? Because we all have those. And so recognizing those things and addressing it, because it will show up in your behaviors, whether you like it or not.
For sure. And I'm also thinking about too, because what we're really talking about is you do hit a ceiling and at some point you've got to delegate. And in order to delegate, you've got to let go, right? And that self-awareness that you should let go. And what often happens is that the shadow side of visionary leaders like us is that when you're not at your best self, you require public recognition and people to acknowledge that you've helped them or that you've done something for them. And so the downside of that is, I think, something that people need to work through, because I'm going to bet that the entrepreneurs that we're talking to right now are experiencing or have experienced the same type thing, where your shadow self is like, hey, you need credit for all this crap. Like, you've built this business. You better get the credit, right? And it kind of hits your ego a little bit to see other leaders that you've created getting credit. You're like, no, that was me. I did that.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot in me when I pause or slow down and go, what is that feeling that I have right now? Yeah, when somebody else succeeds, is there a real genuine joy and pleasure and celebration when there's no credit, there's no recognition of self in it? It's kind of, well, it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for me, you know. That's kind of, but I did create this thing. Like, I think, you know, you're just like scrambling looking for the thing that is your piece of the pie or your credit. You know, where did my initials go, you know? And I kind of, when I'm in my healthy state, I'm really work hard at like, okay, why, you know, you walk past a park bench and somebody's name's on it, like donated by, I'm like, why do people do that? They're dead, you know? It's like they're just desperately wanting this. I did exist. I did live here, you know? I gave you this bench, you know? But I think that sort of sense of who am I and what am I leaving is in all of us. that sort of shift from what is, I mean, you hear people talk about legacy a lot, and I'm like, what do you mean by that thing? You know, it's kind of like, what am I leaving that I can say that I left a footprint here, or, you know, my handprint on something that I did? Just to ask kind of, what is that? Where does that come from? And break it down and address those things. Is that healthy? Is it unhealthy? Because I think there's a part which is like, I don't think it's always an unhealthy thing to say, I was involved in that, you know, because we have a level of like, I was created for something, and I was created, if I believe I was created to do this thing, not that I want credit for it necessarily, and who do I want credit from anyway, but it's actually, where does that root come from? But the honesty is really, really important. Like, oh yeah, I feel that, you know, that sense of, I want to be acknowledged for the significant role I played in that. Where am I getting that from? What is enough? The self-awareness and honesty there, I think, is a huge part for leaders to just actually address those things and say it, name it. What is that thing in me? And then decide if they like it. Because we all have it, and it shows up in our behaviors. But if we're not really, really honest with what is going on under the surface, we start behaving in certain ways. I'll give you an example. So we, at our company, we do this, we're 100% remote company or mobile company. And once a year, we all gather together. And I deeply care about everyone having a great time. I actually, I'm more of an introvert, and I would rather be on my own in smaller environments. I don't enjoy parties, but I love the fact everyone else is having fun. And so if we put on a massive event and people didn't enjoy it, that would be so personally wounding to me. I'm like, what? You know,
hey, this, like, is what supposed do you mean to be fun. You better be having fun.
Do you know how much we invested in this? Like, I want you to have fun, you know? So I'm like, I'm always like, if it's not fun, I don't want to do it. If it's not, this probably comes from my parents. We're only going on vacation if it's memorable, you know? So I'm like, okay, we're only doing this thing if it's actually special, memorable, and significant for people. But the second I get a sense that people might not enjoy it, suddenly budgets are thrown out the window. You know, I'm just like, well, what do we have to pay to do this thing? And you got my integrator, who's also in the finance seat, going, what's happening? Like, we can't do that. And I'm like, but I want them to all enjoy it. And then I'm like, why? And I'm like, well, I want them to feel that I care enough to make it really, really special. But that can get out of whack if I'm not aware of what's going on in me. This drive for significance. And who is it significant in front of? Like, who actually cares? So
you were talking about that everyone is created for something. And you were talking about, you know, that idea of legacy, the idea of it's in humans for seemingly in everyone. Do you think people that you talk to, you've placed a lot of people, thousands, I'm assuming, do most people believe that they have been put on this earth for a specific purpose?
Okay. This is a great question, because I think it does come down to this worldview, purpose, and if I just take it down to a small team level, everybody around in my inner circle, leadership teams, etc., I don't know if that deep conviction of a same worldview, I'm going to come from a creation worldview, that we were created for a purpose. That's my personal conviction. But I get to work with people with all different backgrounds, faith, no faith. But asking what drives them, where does that come from? Why do you do what you do? And why do you want to do what you do? And I think we all have this kind of primal question that's trying to get answered in us. Am I safe? Am I secure? Do I have purpose? Do I have significance? Am I wanted? Do I, you know, all of those things that we're looking for the answer for in what we do, wherever that comes from, whether we agree or disagree, doesn't really matter. But the question I would ask is, what do you believe that you are here for? Not necessarily where does that come from, but what do you believe you're here for? And how do you fit in this story, this adventure that we're in together? Because your world is talking about visionaries and integrators and companies working on operating systems. It always starts with vision, right? We always start, what are we trying to do here? Where are we trying to go? And do people actually want to be a part of that? Do they see themselves fitting in there, and how do they see themselves fitting in there? So I do often ask that question. I just had talking to one a leader just before coming on here today, just about kind of where we're going and where they fit. And they were like, well, I'll be really honest with you. I heard about this opportunity over here, completely different from what we were doing. And there was a level of temptation. I'm like, oh, tell me about that. You know, it's like, well, a little temptation of what was it? And they're like, I don't know, but there's just something in me. And I'm wondering, is there a reason for that temptation? Was I created for something, for this thing? And I'm like, wow, it's definitely worth exploring. But here are some questions to start asking yourself around purpose and your sort of calling, if you will. What are you, when you look back on your life, would you regret not exploring this? And it was a real test for me to celebrate the direction of exploration without getting personally offended or hurt. I'm like, so you don't believe in my vision? It's like, no, I believe in it. Like, I just don't believe
for you.
In,
it's great.
Yeah, for you.
You.
Exactly. And like, but I think one of these that are tests or challenges for leaders, like, well, you want to gather all these amazing people and the right people in the right seats and for your vision. I'm like, well, what about their vision? Because they were created for a purpose, and it might be, it's a wonderful thing to celebrate that for the journey and the part of their journey and part of their story. But statistically, most people are not going to be with you. And how do you actually deal with that when people say, I'm kind of exploring this thing, and what do you think about that? And I'm like, it's really hard as a leader to say, hey, why don't you explore it? And I'll support you. I don't want you to cause a big ripple effect, but why don't you carefully explore it, and if it goes somewhere, I'll celebrate it and we'll deal with that, because I really love you, and I love you not just what you do for me or accomplishing my vision. I don't just see you as a supporting actor or actress in my story. I'm also one in yours. And how do I act as a supporting actor or actress? How do I act as a supporting actor in somebody else's story? Not just my vision, but theirs, and celebrate that. And I said, and if it doesn't work out and it's not the right thing, it will, I like to think that I will be able to go, that's okay. Let's get back onto this then, you know, and celebrate and not be bruised. Like, wow, you were tempted by something else. You know, I'm like, well, I've been tempted by plenty of things, and that's how we've started lots of the things we're doing. I'm like, oh, I have a good business idea. What if we do it over here? Like, what if everybody just rejected me because I was tempted to do this thing? I'm like, well, that's part of visionary work, isn't it? But aren't we all mini visionaries in our own story? And so how do you navigate that as a leader? It's not easy. But that's where that sort of self-awareness, honesty comes in and going, yeah, that would probably hurt. Yeah. Why? Yeah. You know, like, well, it hurts when anyone leaves you. And you see this I see this so many times with leaders, and I'm in the space of with the talent and leadership and everything. Anytime somebody arrives in an organization, the leaders stand up and go, we're so excited that so-and-so is here. They're going to change us. Da, 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 da. We've made a great hire. And there's a sort of my ego. I got a good one. And at some point in time, they choose or we choose for them to leave. And we're like, yeah, they weren't that good. You know,
it's like all of a sudden you got to burn the house down on the way out, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, yeah, I just don't think they were as good as they said they were. I'm like, oh, so you did a really bad job of selecting them there? Oh gosh, no, it wasn't me. It was them. You know, they lied. Right. It's like,
they good salesperson. They sold me.
It's never us, you know? But so I think we can't take the credit when it works well and not take the responsibility when it, but then I just look at it and go, it's not a bad thing. We all have a journey. We all have a purpose. And it's not the sort of stand up and say, some of you are not going to be here in 2 years' time, like this weird passive aggressive, fear-based culture and threat. It's actually, hey, statistically, many of you are not going to be here in 5 years' time. And that's okay. We're so thankful that while you're here, you give it your all and we're doing something together. How do I honor this person? How do I honor that? The work they do and the impact they make on me and us and them. And we actually celebrate them and support them as they launch into new things. That is a tough thing. It is way harder than I'm making it sound. But I think it's an area of opportunity if we really love people. And I know that word is a power, like, oh, hold on a second. Love people, employees. Like,
you've gone way too far here.
But it's like that. Do I care about them more than just their performance objectives?
When Kelly Knight and CJ Dubay and myself wrote our people book, and we talked about daring to build an intentional culture as sort of the subtitle, there's a level of intentionality where you're building a company and you're surrounding yourself with people who, yes, they share your core values, but they're also aligning their purpose with your purpose for a temporary period of time. Mm-hmm. And what we tried to communicate in that book, not necessarily directly, because maybe it would be controversial, and I'm going to say it now, and I want to get your take on it, is that when you take the book apart and you really read what we're saying with personal core focus and aligning it with the core focus of the organization, what we're really doing is breaking down the construct of company. Mm. And we're saying that each individual, you know, you're the only Jonathan that has ever existed, and you're the only Jonathan that ever will exist. And you have a purpose. I've never met a single person, regardless of their belief system, who doesn't feel that they have a purpose, or they cannot fill out a delegate and elevate tool, right? Where they can't actually say, I love to do this and I'm great at it. And so what you end up with is a collection, a company is really a collection of people at its best, where everyone's purpose is aligned with the purpose of the leader, the company, and it moves that forward faster, better, cheaper than it would be if they were by themselves. And it's inspiring. It's inspiring to people. They believe in it. They link arms and they move it forward because it's moving their own purpose forward as well. What do you think about the concept of the mindset of thinking about there is really no such thing as a company? There's just a temporary alignment of individual purposes.
Oh man, that is, I think that's radical. It's beautiful as well, because it gets you to pause and think about the individual to your left and your right and around you, and saying, okay, we're here for this season, this project, this objective. And are we agreed on the objective together? And we're going to work really, really hard. And like, there's lots of mini objectives, mini mountains that we are going to scale and work at together. But it gives you this pause to say, at some point in time, people are going to come and go, or the people getting off the bus, as Collins talks about, and getting all those right people. But it's for this journey, and it might be a short-lived journey, but that's okay. Because, I think it's actually beautiful, because it gives a pause to honor people versus just the numbers, the goals and objectives, and says how they're going to fit within that. I think it's fantastic, because it takes that. I'm talking about really loving people, but you're developing people and giving spot for people around you, like a high performing team. Like we're right now at the time of this recording, the World Cup's going on, and you've got these nations competing against one another, but many of those individuals as players were competitors on different teams prior to this.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago
they one of my kids says, this is going to be interesting, the chemistry, because 2 weeks ago they hated each other. And it's like, right. Now they actually have to be completely unified for this season to try and win together. And there's a level of like absolute pride. I'm representing my whole country for this purpose. And we're going to see, we have to work together in absolute great chemistry and unity for this one goal. See if we can get to the end, you know? And I think it's beautiful. And then they're going to go back to, you know, kind of hating each other again. It's like, I'm quote unquote for anyone listening online, but it's like, I don't think they really hate each other. Maybe some of them do, but it's like that we fought against one another. And now for this season, we're actually together. And I think it's like that. I mean, you come together for a purpose, really clear on purpose, but you actually have to choose to love working one another, because you have to choose to pass the ball to that person with absolute trust and confidence. And you want to set them up to succeed versus not succeed, because you're in a team together.
And then in a lot of ways, then the role of the leader, not necessarily just the leader. I think the World Cup analogy is a good one, where you have that coach that is purposely setting each individual up there to live out their purpose, to succeed, to get what it is that they want from their business, their life, no matter what that might be. And you're accomplishing a much larger goal than together. Mm-hmm. And when you think about kind of rewinding to growth and rewinding to what size company and what kind of impact, because a lot of people think that, oh, growth is bigger, it's better. And that is true, right? It is bigger just by the nature of the term. But you can create a lot of stress for the leader. Do you think you get the same level of stress if you're actually thinking about, I'm going to grow this company, but I'm going to grow this company by facilitating each individual person who's come together on this team for a time to live out their purpose? And by, if I can do that, I'm pretty confident that I'll grow.
Okay.
Do you think that relieves the stress?
Personally, yes. Okay. I'll go back to the EOS life, doing what you love with people you love. The what and then the who and with, that like doing it with these people that I actually love being with, and I care about them and celebrate them for this period of what? But it's not probably going to be forever. And so I think there's the sort of the gig economy is one thing. I'm going to come in and get paid for this project, for the work. But it's very little of that with, and the with and love is missing. Just, I'm going to come in and do this project. It's kind of like almost like how we get in an Uber. Like you swipe that little thing saying, I want the temperature to be 72 degrees and do not talk to me.
Ever.
The fact that button's in there is kind of like, so they get notified. Yeah, I got Mark O'Donnell about to jump in my Uber here, and he does not want me to turn around or, you know, make a noise because he's, you know, it's like people get hired this way. I'm like, I'm hiring you for this job and I'll pay you this in exchange, but I don't want to love you. And I certainly don't want to spend time with you. And I don't want you to call me. And I don't want you. It's like, what is happening? Like that is not enjoyable to me. For some people, if they're just racing as hard as they possibly can to their exit and the massive multiples and their personal success and their personal brand, I'm like, I get it. I just wouldn't want to be in that environment. I think for leaders to be really honest about what they're doing and why they're doing it, and then for everybody else to actually go, no, that's what I'm signing up for that, and that's what I want as well. I think to create a culture, Pat Lencioni was one of your guests, and he was talking about this. There's the huge advantage of cultures that come together and they genuinely and authentically care for one another. Those companies last longer. They outlive other ones because and have much higher retention. People go, yeah, you can pay me 20% more, but it actually, the fact that these people know me outside of work, at least the things that drive and motivate me and what's going on. And when I say, guys, I would love to take on this major project right now. I'd love to own this rock for the whole organization, but I can't because I've got somebody in my life right now who's dependent on me and they're going through a really, really tough season. I can't do it. Could somebody else cover for me? It's kind of like, oh, whoa, not just like, yeah, I'll do it for you. I'm like, hey, pause a second. What's going on? Like, wow, that's a weight you're carrying. I can take the rock for you, but what's going on? How can I actually serve you in that other area of your life? When we actually pause to actually care authentically about the whole person, loyalty increases because people actually, I get to do what I love with people I love. And because I know they love me as well. I'm not just a pawn in their game of chess, but I am actually somebody who they do this for as well.
Right. They're helping you. You're helping them. Mm-hmm. And you are living out your collective purpose for that time. And it becomes a really powerful way to think about a company generally, I think. Is it just about the money or are we doing something bigger than money?
Yeah. Right? These are tough conversations, I think, for people to have because a founder has very, very clear motivations. And often I find that talking to founders, they'll say things like, I can't be open about my actual motivations because I might lose people. Like I'm racing towards an exit as fast as I possibly can.
because they've created something that they're not proud of, that they don't like, or they only ever started it for money in the first place?
Yeah, it's incongruent with their message. They're saying one thing here, but really their motive is different, and they don't know how to change that, you know? If I said, hey, our company is being built, we really, really dynamically and authentically care about our people and their lives and making an impact in the people's lives, but really my whole 10-year target is as fast as I possibly can to make this generational wealth and legacy transformation for my own personal family. I don't really give a flip about anyone else. Those two messages are incongruent with each other, but I find that there's a lot of leaders that is actually the true story, and they're stuck now because they've been saying one thing, but they don't know what to do. And then they feel like it's an indictment on their character, and rightfully so in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely been companies that have been created for the sole purpose of they just want to make as much money as they possibly can so they can sell it and get out. I mean, just thinking about my own story, I started in pharma and biotech, Johnson & Johnson, and started a company with my brother doing the same thing I was doing directly for the company, but as a consulting business, as an engineering consulting business. And when we started that, my entire goal was actually to become a lawyer. I actually wanted to become a lawyer. Why you would ever want to do that, I don't really know. But at the time, I was like, oh, that looks cool. Like, it just looked like something I wanted to do. I was using Johnson & Johnson to pay for law school is really what I was doing. So my brother then says to me, hey, Mark, instead of camping out here for the next 10 years of your life, why don't we just go start a company doing what we're already doing? And you can then go to law school full time instead of part time that you're doing. You know, we'll build this company, we'll sell it in 3 to 5 years. You can become an attorney full time, go to school full time, and then, you know, work or not work, who cares? And so I was like, okay, that's reasonable. So I literally started my first company simply for the money.
Yeah, which there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah. But along the way, you know, you start hiring these people and you start looking at like, oh, one, I'm not really making the money I thought I was in the first place. But, and then, you know, people say they're just starting a company and sell it in 3 to 5 years. Of course, that's a pretty foolish thing to think in the first place. I start seeing that I'm getting quite a bit of enjoyment, satisfaction, start realizing some purpose, because I didn't really know what my purpose was at the time. I didn't really think about it too much. You start interacting with these people and you start helping them, and all of a sudden that you see joy coming from them, and they're able to have a job that they couldn't have before. And, you know, they start having children and they're able to provide for them in ways that they couldn't before. And you're like, oh, this is cool. And I did ultimately sell that company because I felt that I was, because I started implementing EOS in my own business, and I had 9 active companies at the time. And so I was implementing in each of those, and I was seeing these aha moments. I was unlocking the potential in those people that I hired through the tools of EOS. And I'm like, oh, I want to actually do a lot more of this, because these aha moments that are occurring over and over again, that's addictive.
Yeah,
and
it is.
It's making more impact, right? Mm-hmm. So I really found my purpose after I started the process of, I'm just going to build a company to make a bunch of money. And I would never really communicated what the vision for the business was when we were hiring those in those days. We didn't have EOS. We didn't have any systems. So we were just doing things. Yeah. But what do you think about founders, visionaries, entrepreneurs, leaders who start off with the intention that I'm not going to tell anybody because really I just want to ditch them and I'm just using them to get me where I want to go? How often do you find it happens that somewhere along the way they're like, I think this is probably good?
I think it's beautiful when we actually, it's like you discovering your calling or what you're created for. You're like, oh, actually, to have an impact in people's lives and influence people and the significance. One of our team members was saying they were celebrating their 10 years with us, and they were just looking back on their milestones of their personal life during the last decade. And it wasn't like, here are all these amazing experiences I've had with working at this company called Titus. It was actually they were telling the stories of their personal milestones, and I was hearing it going, oh, that's beautiful, that's amazing, that's so great. But it wasn't like a, oh, that's my, I did that. It's like I couldn't, it's not like I was taking credit for it, but it was great to objectively kind of like looking down on this thing, and that's amazing. I'm really thankful that we have built something amazing that's changing people's lives and communities and families and stories, and that's great. It is very rewarding, but you don't necessarily get to take credit for it. It's rewarding, but you don't get to say, that was me. Yes, I was a part of that, but it's their personal story. And so I feel like your evolution there of growing in this, I wanted what you set out for one thing, but then you decide, actually, this is amazing. I'm going to camp out here for a bit. This is really enjoyable. And it's very, very rewarding. I think it's the same as individuals who come and say, I'll probably work at this company for this. Here, check this out. There's a stat that says that people will determine how long they think they will stay at a company within the first 72 hours of their employment there. It's like my experience in those first few days of interacting with people, how I'm treated, how excited they are, how much preparation, how much vision I'm getting, like loads of dynamics in there. But those first few days are really, really important to people because they'll go back and say to their neighbors and their family members, hey, how's the new job? And like, yeah, it's just a little stopgap in my journey. You know, it's kind of like, not like, oh, I can see myself. Yeah, it's kind of like, wow, how the heck did you determine that? But we have this emotional connection to like the vision and the people and how am I, are these my people? Are these the people that I feel connected to? Is it capturing me at this point? But I think there's a natural evolution of during the journey. I mean, I know somebody, actually one of our EOS implementer at Taida said, I know, Jonathan, you keep saying you have no intention to sell, but I've seen so many visionaries and business owners. They say that and say that and say that until one day they wake up and say, screw this. Let's get rid of this. I want to move on now. I'm done. When you're done, you're going to be done. And especially with you being a 10 quick start, you'll probably wake up one day and I'm moving on. I'm like, no, that's not true. That's not true. But I'm like, today, it's still not true. But that I think the honesty with ourselves when things change inside of us, obviously in leading people, you don't want to let all of your, the pressures, the hopes, the dreams, like the shifting of the winds, like overflow into people because then they can be all this kind of the schizophrenia kind of flows through the organization. So there's a maturity there. But if you are really actually changing your position on something, I think people have joined you for this vision. They've joined you for what you've said authentically, and it's okay to change. But when you really have changed, creating a channel or an avenue for dialogue to say, hey, I'm shifting a little bit on this, and I owe it to you to tell you where I'm at, and here's why I'm shifting, and you have a choice to decide, do you really want to be a part of this anymore? And I think there's a beautiful congruency that comes when we're really honest with what's going on in us and how sort of are self-aware and others aware, and that we're both supporting actors and actresses in one another's stories and being honest about the script. So it actually can help you can go further because everyone's like feels actually a lot safer, that psychological safety. I know what's being directed is actually being what's being talked about. It's not like there's secret closed door meetings all the time and somebody else. I don't want somebody else to have this huge windfall and I get left to the dirt. We've had a lot of those conversations at our company and the organization around, like, what is your motive? And I'm like, my motive's clear. I've always been said it. And this is what our objectives are. I'm like, there's in the back of people's mind, like, I feel like I've been here for 10 years and I helped you build this thing. Like, if you're going to suddenly have this amazing payday and I get left out, like, I'm going to be pretty ticked, you know? And I've had those raw conversations with people. I'm like, but like every business owner and founder, I'm like, well, I have the right to do that. Yes, you absolutely. It's not about rights at this point. It's about people feeling connected to the honesty about what you said you are building and why you're building it and how it's going to play out. I don't want to know that you have this other angle that you're not being truthful about.
Right. I mean, that if you do have that, it just lacks integrity and it'll leak out eventually, right? It's just not authentic. It will implode one way or another. I think it's important too, because we've been talking a lot about purpose. And of course, we communicate that in EOS through core focus, your purpose, your cause, your passion. and your niche, take it in combination. It keeps you laser focused versus distracted on shiny stuff. And then we talk about that the niche sometimes can and does change over time, but the purpose, the cause, the passion, that usually is pretty static as a company, and it's pretty static as a person too. Once you go through the process to discover what that is. And I think it's important to distinguish, because you mentioned changing direction, that it can feel unstable for people. And I think there's an important distinction between, are we changing our purpose of where we're going, or are we simply changing the tactics in order to achieve that? And a purpose is never ending, right? It's just, there's no ending to it.
Yeah.
It is forever. It's perpetual. But it's directional, right? So you're always going in this direction, whatever that direction is. Sometimes there's paths that are faster, more effective, better.
Yeah.
And I think that we as leaders owe it to our teams to shift that how, those tactics, as fast as possible, because you're just determining that they're not effective. What you were doing won't work, or it's actually working against your purpose, which does happen. What instances have you seen where you're moving real fast, your mind is like, oh, the purpose is the purpose, we're executing, but this tactic is no longer working, and you shifted and you had to do a bunch of work to try to get everyone to come on board and realize that we're not actually changing the purpose, we're just changing the tactics?
Any listener right now will relate to, in some way, shape, or form, I'm about to say, which is this: we're in this really interesting time of this technology advancements, AI and automation. And so any leader is looking at this going, well, can AI do that? Can we automate that? What has been incredibly human focused and time and materials based is dramatically shifting. And so we go, hey, we're people first. We love you. We're all about you. Da, 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 da. Authentically is true. Yes, that is true. But we're actually looking now at how the work gets done and how efficiently it can get done with the tools and resources in the age that we're in. If I say to my wonderful executive assistant, who will probably listen to this, hey, I want you to look at absolutely everything in your job that we could automate using AI, it can feel really personally attacking, going, you want me to train a bot to do my job? What about me? You said, you know, and so suddenly this becomes a personal valuation of them as an individual saying, yeah, actually, I can pay a bot $20 a month to do this. And it's kind of like, it speaks to the core of like, but this is what I've given my life to. My value is tied to this thing. And I go, hold on a second, zoom back. What is our purpose as an organization? Do we care about you? Do we care about people first? Yes. High performance, impact. Yes, 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 yes. How do we multiply the work that you do using automation and AI and all the technology advancements that are available to us whilst protecting the value of you as an individual and the impact that you make in your family's lives? Now, that is really hard to do. And you probably see these kind of images of these factories over in Asia, and everybody's working in these sort of shops, and they've got little cameras on their heads while the bots are copying, figuring it out. They're like, it's just this super depressing scene of like, we're just training these bots to literally eliminate our jobs. And I've said, no, we want to automate the things that can be automated and should be automated to free you up to do the things that bots can never do ever, which is the absolute authentically human that we're created for relationship. I want to free you up to do that. And if you can do that and help us advance our purpose as an organization, like, now we're on board. The question happens is like, if you can automate somebody's all of their role and there is no use for them to accomplish the purpose, that's where displacement happens, and it's really painful, but let's be honest about it. And so 3 years ago, I said to our entire company, we're going to automate everything that can be automated and should be automated to free you up to be, you know, the personal stuff. And I think those who have got on board with it have multiplied their impact and freed themselves up to do these relentlessly relational stuff, which is part of our value. And it's like, great. They got on board quickly. They became an earlier adopter, and their value has increased according to our purpose. And I think if we can get that congruency there, it's a beautiful thing. And you're actually developing people in there, which I think one of the the new organic is going to be those who have got amazing human relationship skills, like the EQ. And this is why I'm talking all about this inner ceiling thing and like self-awareness and others' awareness, because that's the stuff that people are going to really lean into. And if it's just automatable, then and you're left with no relational skills, like, sorry, you know, I don't know how that fits in this picture, you know, not in life, in the world, but in our business. And so yeah, we train our team members way more on the things that are non-automatable, because with the recognition that everything else will be.
Yeah. And you're creating experiences for people. It's the relationship. It's the human part, as you were saying.
This is really helpful. I hope, my brain, I'm a processor, a verbal and auditory processor and dialogue. And so, I look at the future of our business, and we're in the people business, helping people, companies hire people and develop people and grow leaders. And so we have invested in, since the beginning, because of a belief, a worldview belief that we're created for relationship. We try and make everything relational. And so we'll do experiential things together. Like, even though it's a 100% mobile company, coming together and doing things that are really, really relational, and outside of the box, experiential. So there's a story to tell, an experiential story that's unusual. No, I remember when. And then we do that for our clients, our partners, et cetera, our communities that we create, doing wild things together, from camping to wine tasting.
Building
you
can't houses,
automate
right?
that. Building houses every year, multiple times a year, taking teams down to go and serve those who are homeless and building houses, because you can't automate that. And so investing so much in those things, because it ties to our purpose, and it makes it, it's protecting the thing that will not be automated. I know there'll be certainly an artificial attempt to create those experiences, but we'll fight really hard for the relational. And I think if we have that in our businesses, if that's a value system, and a part of your core focus as a company, I get it, that if you do that and create that, do that really, really well, I think it will goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of loving people through those experiences, and people feel very known, cared for, valued, developed, etc.
So Jonathan, we talked a lot about us as leaders being the bottleneck. As companies grow, you've got to become a different type of leader, a purpose-driven leader, and that will help you break through the ceiling each and every time. But it is a personal struggle. It's a mental struggle. You know, we've probably both thought we would quit 50 times last month.
This morning,
like, oh, I just can't do it. You know, sort of like, you know, pass this cup from me.
Right? Yeah.
I just can't do it. And then you stick in it because you know it's part of your purpose and what you were intended to do. So you keep going, pushing on. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs who are feeling stuck? They're feeling frustrated. They want to quit. They just want to say, all right, you know what? Someone's going to pay me for this thing. Take it. I'm going to go sit on a beach somewhere. And well, first of all, see how long that lasts.
Yeah. How many margaritas can you drink in 2 weeks? It's like,
right. I mean, you'll probably last 4 days, but you'd be like, oh, I'm done. I got to just sell this thing. What advice do you have for them who are stuck, frustrated, and they don't know where to go next?
I do think there's so many aspects of when you really follow the operating system that has been created and you lead and run, is there are aspects in there of clarity breaks. I just think that pause, that sometimes it's like, I'm done, I'm tired. I'm like, okay, are you taking clarity breaks? Are you actually doing that kind of like zooming out and actually taking a good reflection of where you're at? What's going on? You know, what are you created for? And the delegate and elevate tool, all those kind of things. Just what is bogging me down right now? What's consuming my mind? What am I motivated by? So I think tools, like I've got a garage full of tools. I don't use them. Don't know how to use half of them. I've used them one time because I'm like, I don't need to hire a contractor. I can do it myself. I'll just buy the tool. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I end up hiring a contractor to do it. And the tools just sit in the garage. I think there are loads of tools that are handed to us with different operating systems, obviously running on EOS. There are loads of rich, rich tools that are sitting right there, but they're already as good as you use them. So clarity breaks, fantastic. But if you don't use it rhythmically, it causes a breakdown in relationship with yourself and your purpose. In the same way that we know that it's important to have date night with our spouses or significant others, because it's in a dedicated investment time in the relationship to sync up, bring clarity and peace and talk about what's going on and where we're going directionally. It's the same with ourselves. We need to be honest with ourselves, and there are tools that are given to us or laid out in front of us. But if you don't use them, you're going to become frustrated. The weight and the pressure of leadership is going to come upon you until you want to quit. But if you actually zoom out a little bit and go, hey, where am I at? Take a really good, honest look at it, at where you're at. And how do I relate with those around me, the others, and the other people speaking into my life? Where am I finding my strength, my courage, my refreshment from? And am I motivated for where I'm going? I think it's really, that's what I find for me. I'm like, why are we not on the same page, Jonathan? Meaning with myself. It's like, I just need to zoom out and take a clarity break. So I think there are so many rich tools like that that help us when I'm frustrated and I zoom out and I get myself back aligned, healthy again, and whole in myself and honest with myself. And there might be some things that the pressure built and I actually need to get rid of. I need to jettison, or I need to delegate, elevate. And I just had it yesterday, my same page with my integrator. It was beautiful. It was the best one I've had in ages. It was just in the moment. It was like, I really needed that. I'm like, yeah, because we need that rhythm. That's what we do that every month, you know? And suddenly I was like, I don't want to do this stuff anymore. And he was like, okay, you don't have to. What do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to do this. And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, I was up till late last night, wake up early in the morning. I'm writing. I'm excited. I'm envisioned and fresh again, super hyper ADHD, you know, all of the, you know, personality assessments aligned now. And I'm like, that's what I was made for. And I'm like, nothing actually changed. I didn't suddenly stop doing something. It was just a conversation. I thought, I don't want to do that anymore. And he said, okay, let me help you take that off your plate. And it suddenly freed me. I could breathe again. I'm like, it's good for everybody when I'm aligned.
Right. Because if you're not clear, aligned, focused, everyone else, you know, sort of like one little degree off from the visionary is lots of degrees off from everybody else, and they can't keep up. Totally. And it's a complete disaster.
One note on that. I just said to my daughters, I'd ask them a question. I said, you know, what would you wish you could tell me if you knew I wasn't going to react or this? And one of them said, Dad, you know, when you say don't walk in the room and change the atmosphere in a negative way with your emotions, she's 13. She goes, that's totally right. And I know I bring a lot of drama into the room, but I wish you could know this. You do it every day. You don't just change the atmosphere of the room. You change the atmosphere of the whole world. So she said to me, and I'm like sitting there going, what? You know, I'm like, what are you even doing? But I, the agreement was I wouldn't defend or react. I'd only change. And so I'm sitting there going, huh. But I know what it's like. She says, when you're stressed, you want everyone else to feel stressed with you. But we don't know why you're stressed. You just go, ugh. And I'm like, yeah, it's because I'm taking on more than I should. I'm not clear on myself. I'm not aligned. And I'm like stomping around like I'm making it worse than it is. And I'm sure she's making it worse than it is. But it's just that's people experience us at our worst when we don't actually get things aligned. So hopefully someone can relate to that.
If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.